This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Hello and welcome to Yes, it's Pack Name Fever. We name the Super Pack. You decide if it's real. This is, believe it or not, Marketplace from APM. We'll be right back.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Pack Name Fever. I'm your host, Kai Rizdahl. It is the 8th of February today, and this is the game show where we name the Super Pack. You decide if it's real. Winning the future is a real one. Restore our future is another real one. But come on, those are the easy ones. Our contestants today in the first and perhaps the last edition of Pack Name Fever are here in the studio with me. Everybody ready?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Question number one. Is this a Super Pack or the name of the winner of my fantasy football team, Joe Sixpack?
Oh,
what?
The name of your fantasy football
team. Seven, no. It's a Super Pack. Angela knew that one.
I knew that one.
Is he related to Joe the plumber?
Joe, yeah, different guy. Different guy. All right, moving right along. Question number two. Is this a Super Pack or the name of a driving school? Turn Right USA. Oh, yes, Angela Kim on my left.
Super Pack.
That is correct. It is a Super Pack. 1 point for you. Next question. Is this a Super Pack or the name of a booster club for the New England Patriots? Patriots Renewal. Matt Berger.
I'll go out on a limb and say that's a Super Pack.
Sorry, trick question, neither.
Oh,
I know. Okay, here we go. This one's my favorite. Is this a Super Pack or the name of a 1970s TV show? Brady Bunch. Jeff Peters.
I'm going to go with Super Pack for this one.
You should have gone with both.
It's both.
Yes, Marsha. I know, right? Go figure that one out. Here we go. Is this a Super Pack or the name of a fan website for the show, The Voice? Our Voice. Yes, Jeff Tyler.
Super Pack.
It is, in fact, yes, a Super Pack.
Woo!
Very good. Good job. Right. Here we go. Moving into
the
close now.
What's the score?
You know, we called Carl Castle to be our official judge and scorekeeper. Busy today. Couldn't do it. Nancy Fargali, our elections editor, is going to step in.
Well, Kai, it appears that Team A, led by Angela Kim, is leading 2-0.
All right, this is it for all the marbles, the championship of the free world, if you will. Last question, is this a Super Pack or the name of a Star Wars movie? New Hope.
Oh, that's easy.
Sylvester, go ahead.
That's a Super Pack.
It is, in fact, a Super Pack. The name of the movie is A New Hope. That's good.
Way
you know
to
that.
Go.
Right? Exactly. Boo. Team spirit there. Right. Hey. Keep it collegial. And that makes Team A the winner by 1 point. Contestants, thank you very much for coming. The winner gets Nancy Fargali's voice on their home answering machine. And don't forget to join us next week for another edition of Pack Name Fever. There is, believe it or not, actual news today. There's been an underlying buzz this week that there's a big mortgage fraud settlement due any day now. Attorneys general from about 40 states are working on it. But while we wait, the research firm CoreLogic said today the number of completed foreclosures fell by nearly 25% last year. Promising on the face of it, until you realize that that settlement, when it comes, could flush a whole new set of foreclosures out onto the market. Marketplace's Adrian Hill has the story.
The foreclosure market should flow pretty smoothly, like water through pipes. A homeowner is delinquent, the bank forecloses, the house flows through the system and back to the housing market as a whole. Right now, says CoreLogic's Sam Cater,
the flow of foreclosures is declining.
But that flow hasn't slowed down because a whole lot less people are in trouble. Nope. Turns out our pipes have a big, gross hairball clogging them up. Greg Hallman is a senior lecturer at the University of Texas at Austin's McComb School of Business.
Since this robo-signing scandal came to light, it's been my impression that the foreclosure process in this country has kind of ground to a halt.
The robo-signing clog, he says, was created when banks got busted for improperly completing foreclosure filings. Banks have been too afraid to move ahead with other foreclosures until the mess is cleared up. But the settlement that's expected between states and the banks could change that. It's like Drano. Clearing things up for the banks and making the foreclosure pipes run a whole lot faster.
The system will work better in the long run when it gets unclogged, but really this just, you know, it will speed up a process that is painful, I think, for everyone involved.
The pain will involve more foreclosures. CoreLogic expects they'll bump back up to 2010 levels. More foreclosures means more housing supply in an already flooded market, which could mean, you guessed it, even more pain in the form of falling house prices. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
You want the latest and greatest in technology, there are going to be some risks involved, big risks sometimes, which gets us to this. European airline regulators are ordering inspections of Airbus A380s, the double-decker super jumbo jet, after cracks in the wings were discovered. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner has that story.
You might not want to hear this, but cracks aren't that uncommon on airplanes, says aviation professor Joe Vasek.
All airplanes that we fly around in are made of aluminum, and just like a soda can, aluminum cracks if you bend it back and forth enough.
Even newer planes made with composites, like the A380, still have aluminum parts, but some cracks do matter more than others. The Airbus cracks were inside the central part of the wing, and if left untouched, could eventually pose a safety problem. Analyst Scott Hamilton.
It's a simple fix. It's an expensive fix, Airbus has told me.
Airbus won't say how much the fix will cost, but Airbus spokesman Clay McConnell insists the system is working.
You know, we'd rather deal with the headline before it becomes a safety issue.
Nowadays, airline inspectors can spot cracks with fancy equipment like ultrasonic scanners, but Airbus says these cracks were discovered by inspectors walking around inside the wing who spotted them with the naked eye. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Yet another day of waiting for the Greeks on Wall Street. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. At the very least, Rick Santorum's strong showing last night in the various GOP primaries and caucuses livens that race up a little bit. Commentator Robert Reich says the remaining candidates generally do agree on what ails the country. They just miss the cause.
One of the few things the Republican presidential candidates agree on is that President Obama is turning America into what they call a European-style welfare culture. In his standard stump speech, Mitt Romney charges Obama with replacing our merit-based society with an entitlement society. Yesterday's big winner, Rick Santorum, says there's a push to get more and more people dependent. Newt Gingrich calls Obama the best food stamp president in American history. Government data do show that direct payments to individuals shot up by almost 32% since the start of 2009. And almost half of Americans now live in homes where at least one person is collecting a federal benefit, such as Social Security, food stamps, or unemployment insurance. The GOP candidates argue our economic problems stem from this sharp rise in what they see as dependency on government. But they have cause and effect backwards. The reason for the rise in these federal benefits is Americans got clobbered in 2008 with the worst economic catastrophe since the Great Depression, and many are still in it. They and their families have needed whatever helping hands are available. That's why the percentage of Americans falling into poverty has grown dramatically over the past 3 years. January's increase in hiring is good news, but it masks the continuing downward mobility of much of the middle class. Most of the new jobs being created are in the lower wage sectors of the economy: hospital orderlies, nursing aides, secretaries and retail clerks, hotel and restaurant workers. Millions of Americans remain working in their old jobs only because they've agreed to cuts in wages and benefits, and millions of others have become temps or contract workers. If anything, America's safety nets have become too small and shot through with holes. Only 40% of the unemployed qualify for unemployment benefits. We haven't entered into an entitlement society. Too many Americans have entered a downwardly mobile society.
Robert Reich is a professor of public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. His most recent book is called Aftershock, The Next Economy and America's Future. Take a second. Let us know what you think. Marketplace.org is our website. Click on that link that says contact. Here's a very faint glimmer of hope from the land of education funding. A report out this week from the Center on Education Policy says cuts to school budgets may be slowing in some places. Slowing, not stopping. In Colorado, cuts to education spending have gotten so bad the courts are now involved. But whatever the judges decide, it's going to be tough to find the money to make things right. Amy Scott reports now from the Marketplace Education Desk.
It's lunchtime at Helen Hunt Elementary School in Colorado Springs. At one end of the tiny school gym, cafeteria workers serve sandwiches beneath the basketball net. At the other end, a blue velvet curtain hides a small stage.
This is the lunchroom and gymnasium and auditorium for a 400-kid school.
Glenn Gustafson is chief financial officer for School District 11 in Colorado Springs. He says a few years ago, the district closed to nearby elementary schools, and their students came here. The CAFA gymnatorium is so small, students eat in four shifts. They have 20 minutes to scarf their food before the next group shuffles in.
We're having to limit the number of PE and extracurricular activities in the gymnasium because we're having to have more lunch periods. Now, lunch is important, but instruction is more important.
Gustafson says overcrowding at Helen Hunt is one symptom of chronic underfunding in the state. The district has cut summer school and tutoring. Rural schools often don't have AP and honors courses. Four-day school weeks are common. Though it's among the richest states per capita, Colorado ranks near the bottom on per-student spending. Gustafson says it has one of the highest achievement gaps between rich and poor students.
If we can't offer the programs to get these kids to proficiency, then these students will be at risk for success in their life.
So in 2010, District 11 joined other schools and parents suing the state, and they won. In December, a district court judge declared Colorado's school funding system irrational and inadequate and said schools can't afford to meet the state's own education standards. The state appealed.
The state had no choice.
That's Colorado Attorney General John Suthers.
It doesn't have $3 or $4 billion that it can contribute to K through 12 funding.
And it would be tough to come up with that kind of money because in Colorado, the legislature can't raise taxes without voter approval. How much do people hate taxes here? In a budget crunch 2 years ago, Colorado Springs pulled the plug on a third of its streetlights and stopped mowing the medians rather than raise taxes. When a $3 billion state tax increase for schools came up last fall, voters shot it down. Suthers, a Republican, says more money doesn't always mean better education. He points to Wyoming.
They were able to double the amount of K through 12 funding, and about 10 years out, it has not resulted in any improved performance.
School reform advocates say it's all about how the money gets spent. Michael Rebell directs the Campaign for Educational Equity at Teachers College in New York. He says there's a long history of parents and school districts suing states for more money. They often win. The results have been mixed.
The fact that the money is there doesn't mean that the education system will give children opportunities that will make a difference. But without it, I don't think you're going to make much progress.
To see what money can do, I visit a new school in Colorado Springs. Christa McAuliffe Elementary was built 4 years ago with a bond issue. It's not a rich school. More than half its students qualify for subsidized lunches. But inside, it's got polished concrete floors straight out of Starbucks, a huge gym. Those things alone don't help kids learn, but they help attract teachers who do.
When I do a teacher posting, you won't find schools with equal challenges, maybe that have the same number of applicants. So I always have a great pool of applicants.
Principal Denise Rubio-Gurnett says this year, for the first time, every grade level, that is 26 classrooms, improved on a district math test. The kids are still far behind, and it could be a long time before any schools in District 11 get all the resources they need. The state Supreme Court won't rule on the funding lawsuit for another year. Then it could be up to taxpayers. In Colorado Springs, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Coming up, living hand to mouth, tightening your belt. They're not just metaphors, you know.
For example, if my income is down, I don't go out to eat as often, and meals eaten out of the home are probably less healthy and more caloric.
Losing weight, Freakonomics style, but first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials rallied late to finish up 5 points, a fraction of 1%, closed at 12,883. The NASDAQ up 11 points, 0.4%, ended things at 29.15. The S&P 500 gained 2 points, 0.2%, wrapped up at 13.49. Starbucks steamed up 0.2%. Coach pocketed a 1.1% gain. Ralph Lauren, or Ralph Lauren, I get it wrong every single time, strutted after a rise of 9%. My editor's going to get me on that one. Sprint, Nextel dialed down 1.6%. The country's third largest cell phone company sold fewer iPhones than expected. Apple, by the way, powered up 1.2%. Western Union unplugged 10%. The wire transfer company had a weaker than expected outlook for the year. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 1.98%. And you? Yeah, you're listening to Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Thursday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on wholesale inventories and sales for December. Let's move! That's what First Lady Michelle Obama encourages in her fight against childhood obesity. She'll begin a 3-day national tour celebrating the second anniversary of the campaign and solving the age-old question, what am I going to wear? Fashion Week begins in New York. Not for nudists. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. You know, the world of romance just ain't what it used to be. Specifically, the world of starting a romance. There's speed dating and group dating and online dating. The Facebook era now brings us social dating, websites built on the bones of our social networks. Badoo.com is one of them. Sally Herships became one of 137 million Badoo members to get us the story.
Remember when online dating was new? Jonathan Sperman does.
I was online dating back when it was the kind of thing you couldn't let anyone know you were doing.
Sperman is 34. He's getting his master's degree in education, and he lives on Long Island.
If there were girls that, you know, I was dating, I might say, well, can we make up another story for how we met so we don't have to say it was from a website or something?
Because who does that? But then...
Facebook.
Facebook has 845 million users worldwide.
Social networks got popular, and we got much more comfortable sharing our personal lives online. So much so that entrepreneurs are now latching on to our social networks to create social dating sites, like Badoo.com. Badoo looks like a typical dating site, lots of profile pics of guys without their shirts on. You search for people to meet by body type, age, or even zodiac sign. But there's a big difference between Badoo and sites like JDate or eHarmony. Mark Brooks is a consultant to the online dating industry.
The world is going to know if you sign up to Badoo.
When you say the world, who do you mean?
Anybody who's looking on Facebook.
Typically, the only people who know you're on a dating site are the other daters. But when I used Badoo's mobile app, the news that I was on the site was posted on Facebook for all my friends to see, including my husband. Brooke says broadcasting your private life is key to Badoo's success. Subscription sites like eHarmony spend millions on advertising to attract new users. But Badoo doesn't have to. Its users spread the word for it.
Yes, they're not paying so much to acquire users. In fact, many cases, they're not paying anything.
And neither are many of Badoo's users. The company says it's on track to take in $150 million a year. To make that, Badoo accepts ads and charges micropayments to users who want to promote themselves. I paid $1 to get my picture posted on top of the site's homepage, which got me a lot of emails like these.
Hi, sexy. Hi, Sally. You seem adorable.
I'm testing out Badoo for work. I'm okay with people knowing. But some daters aren't. Eli Finkel teaches psychology at Northwestern. He says while online dating may never entirely shed its stigma, a social dating site as popular as Badoo symbolizes a big change.
It suggests that we've reached a critical stage in the way online dating works, that the stigma is largely gone.
Most Badoo users are under 40. They're used to sharing their lives online. And they don't have the protection that traditional dating sites give. You know, the freedom to lie about your age or weight. It's hard to fudge the facts when your social network is watching. So, is sharing the news that you're online dating, possibly with the entire world, worth it? Remember Jonathan Sperman? He used to be really hush-hush about online dating.
I've embraced it more. I mean, I'm not currently dating someone, though I am speaking to someone from Badoo, and I'm kind of looking forward to being able to say, yeah, I met her from this website.
But Sperman has limits. He's concerned about keeping his work and social life separate, and he's not prepared to share everything, even to get a date. That's why he told me he draws the line at linking his Facebook account to Badoo. You'll hold on to the privacy.
As long as I can, I will hold on to that.
In the meantime, Badoo has a counter on its homepage, which tracks new members. And as I'm watching, every second, the number ticks higher. In New York and online, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Time now for a little Freakonomics Radio. It's that moment every couple of weeks where we talk to Stephen Dubner, the co-author of the books and the blog of the same name. It is The Hidden Side of Everything. And Dubner, you know what? I'm especially glad to have you back this week. You know why?
I know why.
You do. I know. You sent me something. I love it when you send me things.
I sent you something. What can I tell you? I'm a benevolent kind of fella.
That's right.
So go ahead, Kai. Open up your little package.
All right. Here we go. All right. It's a little bubble wrap envelope with an envelope inside.
Very careful.
Very careful. With okay, so it's a pack of Marlboros, and I don't smoke, dude.
Believe it or not, I'm trying to help you stay trim. All right, so I want you to listen to Kip Viscusi, who's an economist at Vanderbilt who studies smoking.
All right.
Well, one thing is that if you give up smoking, you'll gain some weight. May not be enough to make you morbidly obese, but it'll make you a little heavier.
All right, so here's the hidden side, right? It's the unintended consequences of giving up
you
smoking.
You are learning, my friend, Kai. So
how long have we been doing this segment?
A couple of years, but you're
That's
getting
right.
there,
All
you
right.
know. So our smoking rate in this country has been falling dramatically, which is fantastic news. But there's a hidden side to that, as with everything. Now, listen, I am not saying that smoking is a good way to fight weight gain. Let me be clear, okay?
Yes.
It is not, and smoking is bad for you.
Very.
But this is an instructive lesson about trade-offs because I want to talk today about another weight-related trade-off having to do with our economy. So, Kai, let me ask you this question. What do you think that the Great Recession has done to our collective waistline?
Yeah, okay, I'm going to go with my gut. It's a bad thing, right? Because people are going to McDonald's for the dollar menu and all that stuff, right? And thus we're getting fatter.
That is a fantastic guess, and you might even be right this time.
Usually with you, I'm wrong, but anyway.
Usually you are, but some research suggests that you may be right, but there's other research that suggests the opposite. So let me play the opposite. Here's Christopher Room, who's an economist at the University of Virginia.
Okay.
What we've learned over the last decade or so is an initially surprising fact that when times are bad, people get healthier over many dimensions. And one of those appears to be obesity. So that, for example, if my income is down, I don't go out to eat as often. And meals eaten out of the home are probably less healthy and more caloric.
All right. Makes sense on its face, but I'm still not convinced.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Obesity is one of those problems that has a lot of different causes, right? And not all of them are obvious. You were right to focus on the relationship between dollars and calories. That is incredibly important to consider. I mean, think about this. For the vast majority of human civilization, it was a big struggle for us to provide enough affordable calories for everyone.
Right.
But Over the past few generations, we have gotten very, very good, particularly rich nations like ours, at making calories abundant and delicious and cheap. The markets have given us exactly what we wanted, and now we're dealing with a side effect.
Well, so are you saying then we should intervene in the markets and make those calories more expensive? I mean,
well, look, I'm not a big intervener kind of guy, but that's the right question to ask. Let's go back to your cigarettes that I sent you, okay? And talk about how the incentives work. Okay. That pack I sent you cost, believe it or not, $12 here in New York City.
No way, really?
And about half of that was taxes. Now, economists generally agree that cigarette taxes have helped drive down smoking. So if you raise the price of cigarettes a little bit, consumption falls. Mm-hmm. And that is why, if you want to talk about obesity now, some people like the idea of a fat tax, mm-hmm. which is a tax on fat foods, not fat people, by the way. And they've no. tried this in Denmark and Hungary, and there's some talk of trying it here.
Yeah, but that's never going to fly, right?
It is a classic regressive tax. Yeah. It would hit harder low-income people than high-income right. people, which makes it tough. Another tough sell is to change the food subsidies coming out of Washington, right? So there's billions of subsidy dollars that now go to corn and wheat and soy, none of which are bad in and of themselves, but products of those get turned into very, very, very cheap additives in junk food. So right. one argument is that we should shift those subsidies toward things like, you know, fruits and vegetables. So it's cheaper to eat healthier.
Which makes sense. All right. So do me a favor next time you send me something.
Yeah.
Make it fruits or vegetables or beer actually would be good too. You could send more beer.
Right? I will, light beer. It's on the way.
No, right. not light beer. But that's a whole nother segment. Stephen Dubner, Freakonomics.com is the website. He's back in a couple of weeks. See ya.
My pleasure, Kai. Thank you.
Freakonomics Radio is supported by Novo Nordisk, since 1923, committed to diabetes care and areas of unmet medical needs at novonordisk-us.com. Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, just because this stuff is too good not to use, there are 314 officially registered super PACs, 314 of them. So test yourself in a little play-along game of pack name fever. Is this a super PAC or the name of a local morning TV show? America, get up. How about this one? American Restoration, super PAC or a History Channel show? We've got the answers on our website. Also, our super, super PAC name generator. Courtesy of the web guys over at WNYC. It's all on our website, marketplace.org. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow rallied late to finish up 5 points. The NASDAQ rose 11.4%. The S&P 500 gained 2 points. Ravi Karman, Chris Clark, Stephen Colon, Bradford Craig, Bill Lance, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, and Brendan Willard engineer the broadcast for us. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Do hope you can join us again tomorrow. This is APM, that's American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.